Coming up on New York Now, Rachel Silberstein of the Times Union and John Campbell of the USA Today Network join us at the Reporters Roundtable.
We saw a New York Times article this week on Donald Trump's potential tax fraud. And it was within 24 hours that the Cuomo campaign had an ad up tying Mark Molinaro to it and saying, where's Mark Molinaro's taxes?
And amid the growing popularity of the High Peaks region, a push for more state forest rangers.
It's gotten to the point now where we have 100 search and rescue incidents a year in the High Peaks. So that's one every 3 days. And of course, they're concentrated more in a 6-month period. We're really to the point where we're just waiting to respond.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. My partner, Matt Ryan, will be joining us in just a bit. We start the show for some analysis at the Reporters Roundtable, where I'm happy to be joined by Rachel Silberstein from my own paper, The Times Union, and John Campbell of the USA Today Network. All right, lots of politics to talk about, particularly the decision on Wednesday by the Progressive Working Families Party to hand Governor Andrew M. Cuomo its line, taking it away from Cynthia Nixon. But the big question, of course, is will the governor accept?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking Friday morning, and that's still an open question at this point. The governor spoke to reporters yesterday on a conference call and said, well, you know, I haven't had any conversations with the Working Families Party, and that's to be decided. The party gave him until today to accept, I believe, so we'll find out later in the day. That being said, you know, this is the Working Families Party took a chance on backing Cynthia Nixon. They have a lot of people within their executive committee, within their party, that are not happy with Andrew Cuomo, that haven't been happy with Andrew Cuomo for pretty much 8 years at this point. But they made the determination that they don't want to play spoiler. They don't want to put another candidate in this race that could siphon votes from Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, a key difference between 2014 and this year is in 2014, WFP had all the leverage, and Cuomo made what was later referred to as the hostage video of all his progressive promises. And this time it seems like WFP are the hostages.
Now, the big question here is they don't want to be spoilers, but they also need to get 50,000 votes on their line in order to maintain that ballot line for another 4 years. That is a big deal for the party.
It's a big deal for the party, but I don't think it's necessarily too big of a hill to climb. I mean, several candidates every year get 50,000 votes, and if they had Nixon or Cuomo on that line, they'd be fine in that regard.
Well, I think Nixon didn't really want to run, so we don't know if she'll even stay on the ballot. I think that's a fear, right? If she doesn't seem like she wants to stay in the race.
She was out of town for the meeting on Wednesday. She didn't even show.
And Karen Scharf had said that it's her preference not to. Karen Scharf is one of the directors of the Working Families Party.
And definitely from kind of the more progressive activist side of the party.
Yeah, absolutely. And she had said during the meeting on Wednesday that it's her Cynthia Nixon's preference not to run, but if it's the decision of the committee to keep her on there, there's not much they can do because there's not much she can do because she would have to be nominated to another position.
Right.
There's also the question of what happens to the unions. Are they going to come back? They provided a lot of financial support. Like this year, there was a lot of small donors and excitement. But in an off-year election, you know, they might need their unions back.
And it was the governor who really kind of sundered that relationship between the Working Families Party and the union. Basically, in the spring, he said, it's time to choose. You're either with me or you're with the WFP. Now, the governor, of course, as Rachel noted, has a lot of leverage, and that was borne out in a Siena general election poll that came out this week that found the governor in very strong position. He leads Mark Molinaro in a six-candidate race, 50-28, with Cynthia Nixon on the WFP line still pulling 10%, and the other three candidates, Stephanie Miner, Howie Hawkins and Larry Sharp, the Libertarian candidate, pulling low single digits, all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing about that poll, too, is they also took a look at Molinaro versus Cuomo without any of the third-party candidates, and Molinaro fared actually a little better without the third-party candidates. You know, the conventional wisdom is kind of, you know, all these third-party candidates pull a percentage point or two or three from the governor, and then maybe Molinaro can slip in there. But the Siena poll that showed that wasn't necessarily the case. It's you know, it's a very tough climb for Mark Molinaro. You know, he's way, way down in fundraising. Even with the governor spending $25 million on his primary race, you know, the governor has been out there with advertisements trying to define Mark Molinaro before he has a chance, tying him to Donald Trump. You know, we saw a New York Times article this week on Donald Trump's, you know, potential tax fraud. And it was within 24 hours that the Cuomo campaign had an ad up tying Mark Molinaro to it and saying, where's Mark Molinaro's taxes? So it's a very difficult hill to climb in a 2-to-1 Democratic state.
Yeah, and his messaging is kind of tired at this point. He keeps hitting him on corruption. That was Cynthia Nixon's messaging, and look where that landed her. So
right. We should also note that Cuomo is up. He's up by 60% or more than 60% in New York City. He is up 24% in the suburbs. In upstate, however, the race is a little bit closer to dead even, or statistical dead heat.
Yeah, and in 2014, you know, if you took New York City out of the equation, which is, you know, a big hypothetical here, Rob Astorino, the Republican candidate in 2014, actually beat Andrew Cuomo by a slim margin outside of New York City. So that's not necessarily a surprise that he's running well with Andrew Cuomo upstate, but the votes are on the suburbs and in New York City.
Stepping away from the race for a little bit, if one can imagine doing so, let's talk a little bit about the administration of state government. Rachel, you had a story on Wednesday in the Times Union about a blown deadline for the State Drinking Water Quality Council.
Yes. So they had last year they set up the council, which was supposed to look at PFOAs and PFOs and different emerging chemicals, toxic chemicals that have been linked to cancers in Hoosick Falls and Newburgh in Long Island. And they had, you know, in the statute, there was a year deadline for them to come up with a bunch of recommendations. And, you know, all last week there were activists at the Capitol sort of being like, where's the report? They haven't met since February. They were supposed to have four meetings. They only had three. And sure enough, the deadline came and went this week, and there were no recommendations. Instead, the administration announced $200 million for treatment for, you know, municipalities could compete for or apply for these grants, $200 million in grants for treatment systems and infrastructure. And I think they, you know, I did talk to the folks at the Department of Health, and they say, you know, they're trying to do it in a more comprehensive way. The activists will point out that, you know, Vermont and other states are sort of ahead of New York in that they've already made limits on these emerging toxins. You know, they'll say, well, we're trying to be more comprehensive about it. They say they've identified already five different of these new
limits.
Yeah. And so hopefully they'll have something by November or December.
After the election, notably,
right, conveniently,
which could potentially be something of a hot button issue.
Yeah.
And John, the end potentially of a long saga that you have been covering, the controversy over state highway signs that have appeared on federal roadways, thus imperiling several million dollars in federal transportation funding.
Well, I have my doubts that it's the end, but you know, we saw after you know, last Friday, there was a deal reached between the federal government and state government on the I Love New York highway signs. If you've spent any time traversing highways in New York, you've seen these signs. They're blue. They say they tout the state's tourism programs, and the federal government for years has been saying they're illegal and had told the state to take them down, which the state repeatedly ignored. That led to a $14 million fine, but the federal government gave the state until October 1st to come to an agreement to restore that money and take the signs down. We found out more information about it this week. You know, the state has been very protective of the details of this agreement, like just will not release it. I was able to obtain a copy. You know, it shows essentially that the first sign in the groups, the so-called motherboard, that's going to stay up. The next four in these groups of five, these signs are grouped in five, they're all going to be taken down and by November 21st, it seems, which also is after Election Day. So this has become a hot button topic in the campaign. You know, some of Cuomo's opponents have been trying to use it against him. The state will not say that they're removing the signs. They're saying they're relocating them, saying that they're going to be relocated to parks and historic sites, and that'll be another battle down the road.
The initial statement was hilarious because it basically said that the state had reached, I think the phrase was, kind of an historic agreement to allow many of these signs.
20%
to,
yes. or something.
Yeah, the 20% of these signs will be able to remain up. But the problem is that if you've ever driven on the highway, these signs are really detailed and very hard to read. It's almost like you are being given an eye test as you sail down the highway.
Well, and the feds have just tons of issues with them. But the biggest ones are they advertise an app and a website, which that's not a good thing to advertise to a driver hurtling down the throughway.
Yeah.
They're busy. There's five of them in a row. It takes your eyes off the road five times in a short succession. So it's the feds have a lot of issues with them. The website and the app will be coming off of those signs. That is one of the parts of this compromise.
Has anyone tested out the app? Does it actually work?
I'm glad you asked. There is evidence that since they put these signs up, more people have downloaded the mm-hmm. app. But that also came with some promotion of the app. They will, as part of this agreement, have to test driver reaction to these signs and whether they come into they're a distraction. There actually will be no signs in the North Country to test one region against the other. And then the University of Buffalo is actually going to have to step in and test driver reaction to these signs. It's a whole thing.
I look forward to more John Campbell stories on this saga. We should circle back around on one thing that John mentioned earlier, which is the enormous and really monumental New York Times investigative report into the Trump family's, Donald Trump's father, and Donald's potential tax fraud in the way that they set up the company and the way that the company was essentially funneling profits to the Trump children. That story, we should note one of the three reporters who worked on it is Suzanne Craig, who is one of our former colleagues covering the state capitol, where she did great work. Almost immediately, the State Department of Taxation and Finance announced that they were going to be looking at some of those issues.
Yeah, absolutely. They said they're going to vigorously pursue any avenue of investigation, that they're reviewing them. You know, there are strict statute of limitations on prosecuting tax crimes in New York. It's generally 3 or 6 years, depending on the crime, and that mirrors the federal statute of limitations. But for civil penalties, back taxes, interest, that is something that you can go back for eternity and levy those kinds of penalties. So that is more in the realm of what the state tax department would be. Would have at their fingertips in terms of penalty options.
All right. Well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Rachel Silberstein from the Times Union and John Campbell from USA Today Network. And now we'll kick it back to Matt Ryan at the desk.
All right. Thanks, Casey. This is one of the most popular weekends to head to the Adirondacks. Fall foliage is at its peak, making it a great time to get in some hiking before the colder weather arrives. There has been a noticeable increase in the number of people heading to the more popular mountains inside the High Peaks area, so much so that the DEC announced some significant new rules this year. But one man we talked to is concerned that forest rangers, charged with helping to protect and educate this increasing stream of visitors, are being stretched too thin. The High Peaks' popularity has never been, well, higher. More people, more cars. But according to Scott Van Laer, not enough forest rangers.
It's gotten to the point now where we have 100 search and rescue incidents a year in the High Peaks. So that's one every 3 days. And of course, they're concentrated more in a 6-month period. We're really to the point where we're just waiting to respond.
Van Laer has been in his job for over 2 decades and is a union delegate for the PBA of New York. He is more than halfway through his goal of hitting every one of the 100 towns inside the Blue Line and getting a resolution passed in support of increasing the number of rangers throughout the state.
We've been hit with a tremendous overuse of state land, and we're really feeling the lack of staffing, primarily the last 5 years. And we have a shortage of staff statewide, but it's more compounded in these really heavy state land use areas, particularly the Catskills and the Adirondacks, and some unique areas out in western New York. So we've been lobbying kind of the traditional ways, going through Albany, working internally, And our union just really hasn't gotten a lot of traction that way. We've had a bill that's been stalled for a long time that would add a new position for every 30,000 of acres that were added of state land. Now that bill would only help the problem going forward. It wouldn't help any of it retroactively. So add to the shortcomings we had with the million acres that have been added over the last few decades. So we've changed things up. We've gone back to our communities.
We caught up with him in the northern Saratoga County town of Greenfield.
We've become totally reactionary. And that, while it may help in a sense that I can respond quickly to an incident and save people, because I'm kind of staged just in a parking lot and I can drive and go where I need to go, but it doesn't help prevent any incidents because I'm not delivering that message to the public anymore that I used to. Not just leave no trace, but ways to be safe. So we have many, honestly, neophytes coming into the outdoors, and we're glad. We want the public to utilize state land, but we're just not providing that service to the public, and we're not providing the service for state land protection that we used to.
Let's look at the numbers. Under Governor Andrew Cuomo's tenure, New York has added over 130,000 acres of land to the Forest Preserve. The Department of Environmental Conservation said there are currently 135 rangers. The High Peaks area is designated by the agency as Region 5, where Van Lier works. Right now, he is one of 48 on patrol there. He says that's 8 fewer than the DEC had in 1971. He wants to see the total number of rangers increased to 175. We caught up with the DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos a few weeks ago at a press conference in Albany.
Commissioner, I know you're an active Twitter user and you follow people in the Adirondacks. There's really been a big outcry, especially in the last 6 months, from people like Scott Van Lier who want more forest rangers. You just say they're understaffed. I'm sure you know he's hit, I guess, half the communities in the Adirondacks so far looking for a resolution of support. He's got all of them. What's the solution here? I mean, they've been asking for more forest rangers for a long time. Where do we go from here?
Well, I mean, you know where we are in the budget process, right? We don't just add staff in the middle of the year. Adding any environmental conservation police or forest rangers requires us to get the budget appropriation and then have an academy, which is a 6-month academy. So you don't just flip a switch on that kind of a thing. And we've been working very closely with the rangers and the ECOs on their needs. In fact, in the last 2 years, we held back-to-back academies, so we're actually at the highest levels in about 30 years for our forest rangers. Doesn't mean we don't want to go higher. We have to work within our budget constraints, but you know, we're seeing the record use up in the Adirondacks and Catskills. We're making a number of different changes to how we operate in those areas. Some of that is on the forest ranger side. Some of that is going to be obviously on the overall management side. How do we better direct people to different areas? How do we spread out the interest a little bit so it's not just in really intense areas up in the High Peaks? There's no question, you know, we're deeply committed to the forest rangers. I work literally. I talk to the directors almost every day about issues around the state. I'm well aware of their needs, and you know, we're committed to ensuring the public has a good experience when they go up there.
Recognizing the growing number of people and cars lining Route 73 in Essex County from May to October, the DEC held a series of forums this spring asking for input from people on how to best alleviate the problem and the potential danger.
70% of the people I meet on the top of Cascade, it's their first 46, it's their first hike even. So to take that away and turn it into an 8-mile hike, I'm worried you're going to be taking away a jewel from what's happening to something where you're not going to get the same families, you're not going to get the same beginners, you're not going to get the same first-time experience hikers.
I fear that if you try to disperse people too far to other places, you may push them right out of the park. So be inviting and take advantage of what you have and let people enjoy it.
In August, the agency finalized a new set of rules for the High Peaks that included constructing some new parking lots, expanding others, and painting actual lined spaces for vehicles. They also closed the current trailhead to Cascade, the most popular High Peak climb because of its relative ease and beautiful views at the spacious summit. Instead, a new parking lot and trail will begin to the mountain from the Olympic Sports Complex.
for the first couple of months, it's been relatively successful. But we know that this is a multi-year project of ours. You know, we want to put in place some early projects to see, you know, what the impact is going to be. Ultimately, you're still seeing a lot of people go to the same place. So the new parking lot at Van Ho is going to be, a long-term, a very good solution. We're working really closely, though, with the towns up there, working on shuttle services, you know, ways to get people into the backcountry that don't involve them having to park on main roads. I mean, for me, yes, it's a resource management issue, but it's also a safety issue. You see all those cars parked on 73, and it's just, at some point, all the work that we're doing between DOT, DEC, and state police, we want to make sure that no one's, you know, actually going to be injured on those roads.
The DEC notes that in addition to the 135 rangers patrolling 5 million acres of state land, there are also 22 assistant forest rangers. They point out they're also aided by environmental conservation officers, also known as ECOs, plus other state and local police and fire departments inside the blue line. Scott Van Laer says he's seen improvements this fall on the busy weekends due to the new parking regulations and is grateful for the recent help of the ECOs on its enforcement, but says more forest rangers can ease the current burden he and his fellow co-workers are dealing with at a time when the forest preserve has never been more popular for hikers, for both the experienced and inexperienced.
I understand the difficulties of adding new items. I realize that I am a taxpayer also, and I'm very grateful for my job and the support of the public. It's really about public protection and resource protection. We've gotten to a breaking point where the services we provide has just deteriorated for basic patrol. I mean, we're not getting into backcountry anymore. On Saturdays in particular, year-round, and almost all of the summer months, I'm really struggling to get in the backcountry, and oftentimes told by my supervisors, do not go in the backcountry. So, think about these core interior areas, Lake Holden, Marcy Dam, the Johnsburg Valley. We're not getting there anymore. We're only getting there when somebody gets injured. We've gotten to the point where we're almost like, we're on like pins and needles waiting to respond to stuff. And it's not just those number of incidents, it's the possibility of the incidents. So we're almost held hostage by, hey, yesterday we had two, we got to be ready for the two today. It makes it very difficult with a small staff to do all the other things that we should be doing. Hiker education, backcountry stewardship. It's becoming very difficult, almost impossible to accomplish that.
Time now for this week's New York Now poll question. Do you think the state should significantly increase the number of forest rangers? Let us know at nynow.org. Last week, we asked, how concerned are you about the federal debt? And over three quarters said, very. Ann in Rochester, watching on WXXI, said, I'm most concerned that the Republicans only seem to care about the debt when Democrats are in power. Whenever they're in charge, they only seem to care about tax cuts for the wealthy, which only makes the problem worse. Lewis in the North Country, watching on Mountain Lake PBS, how can intelligent people think that they can spend more money than they have and not have to pay it back at some point? And finally, Thomas in South Glens Falls told us, the federal debt will turn this country into a second world country, and the generations to follow will pay the price, while we and our representatives, the creator of this nightmare, will be sleeping in our graves. Thank you to all those who took the time to vote. The website, again, is nynow.org. There you can find all of our past programs and links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. You will find a link to the Capital Confidential blog on our site. It's also found at timesunion.com.
When you have this careerism, people want to get along with others in the political system. They got to raise money, they got to get along with other politicians, they got to not step on toes. No one's going to deal with this corruption issue who's part of the system. And that's the weakness of my opponent. She has a long career in public service, and that's laudable. But the things you have to do to move up in the system inherently make it difficult, if not impossible, to do what you need to do for the taxpayers, particularly on this corruption issue.
Well, what can you do as Attorney General, specifically? I know there's been a lot of ideas batted around. How could you make a difference in fighting corruption?
Well, let me tell you what I won't do. What I won't do is, like my opponents, say that I have to wait for the legislature to give me permission before I go after anybody or do anything
about
it.
Well, the Attorney General's powers are somewhat limited, right?
No, but there are plenty of powers that the Attorney General has. The fundamental power of the Attorney General is to protect the citizens and the treasury of the state of New York. You know, that is a power that goes back to the state constitution in 1846.
Next week, we sit down with the GOP nominee for Attorney General, Keith Woodford. He's taking on Democrat Tish James, currently the New York City Public Advocate. We should also mention we have a new podcast up in addition to all of our regular shows. Karen DeWitt sits down with the Green Party candidate for governor, Howie Hawkins. You can listen to it on any of your mobile devices, or you can do so right at our websites, nynow.org.
Well, that's all the time we have this week. We leave you with footage from Bethel, scene of the Woodstock Festival, 3 days of peace and music. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.